Do you like winning free stuff? Then you're in luck. For the next couple of weeks, we're hosting not one, but two exciting photo contests right now at toyphotographers.com. In the first, you have a chance to win an entire box of Series 18 collectible LEGO minifigures and a $200 LEGO shopping spree. And in the other, we're giving away one of the new LEGO Downtown Diner modular buildings. So don't delay, you can get all of the details on our website, toyphotographers.com. You're listening to the Toy Photographers Podcast, the official podcast of toyphotographers.com. I'm James Garcia, and on this show, I talk to photographers around the world who are turning LEGO, action figures, miniatures, custom creations, and more into amazing works of art. This week, I spoke with LEGO photographer Joseph Calishaw, or Joe Cal for short. Joe lives in Utah, where he uses the desert landscape along with vintage lenses to give his photos a signature look. And in his spare time, he creates playable ocarinas out of polymer clay called Wow Flutes. That's actually him playing in the opening music to this episode. I asked Joe about all of this and more in this week's podcast. I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I did. Let's start with how I start everybody off. How did you first get into photography?
Well, so my brother, he's always been into photography as long as I can remember. He's about 3 years older than me. But in high school, you know, he convinced me to buy a camera. So I bought a Zenit E, the Russian-made Zenit E from eBay. And it came all the way from Russia. It was a film camera, rangefinder. Yeah, it was $30, and it came with a fixed lens, the Helios 44-2, which I actually still use that lens all the time in my photography. So fantastic lens, really fast, pretty sharp, and great bokeh. But yeah, that was kind of how we started out, and I was kind of a hobbyist then, and just I still am, but I didn't know what I was doing. I took a class in college, and I kind of upgraded, got a Nikon N75, another film camera. You know, it was a lot better than anything else I had had. Yeah, then I got a digital camera, like a little 32, I think it was a Nikon Coolpix 3200. And that was actually a really good camera, and I beat the heck out of that thing.
When you started with photography, were you doing mostly landscapes or portraits, or what kind of stuff were you photographing at first?
I was kind of doing everything. You know, I was always with my brother, usually on photography trips. So, I mean, I try to do landscape shots, but I like to focus on macro, like really close up stuff. And I kind of got out of photography. Then I got an iPhone back in like 2010, 2011, and found Instagram and just started taking lots of pictures again with my iPhone.
That's a common story I've heard so far, is people getting back into photography because of the iPhone or Instagram and how easy it was to have that photography stuff accessible again.
Yeah, and I've always been interested in photography, and it's always been fun. But it was always just like, hey, go get your camera. We're going to go for a couple hours out in the desert or something. It was always specific trips. And now it's like I always have my camera gear with me. So
when did you then start photographing toys? How long ago was that, and why did you start doing that?
Oh, I think the first toy photo I took was back in 2013, and it was those little the minifigures. I didn't know that they made tons of series of minifigures for LEGO. And I had no idea that there was so many different ones. I mean, I played with the minifigures as a kid all the time. Like I'd buy the LEGO set. You know, the set was fun to build and all, but the minifigure went everywhere with me. So and I'd take old film canisters, I'd put the minifigure in there and carry it around everywhere. But I'd put it down ditches and streams, and you know, he went on a lot of adventures. But it was, you know, in 2013, I joined Instagram in 2012, and I did see some toy photos on there. I don't remember who or what photos they were, but then I saw that they made minifigure series, and you know, so I ordered a few from the series, I think it was the, I don't know what series, like series 9 or something. It was the chicken suit guy.
Oh, okay.
And the sad clown. So I just ordered some of those from Toys R Us, and they got in the mail, and those were the ones that I got. And, you know, started a little collection of those, and I took a picture of one in my pottery studio, and that was like the first toy photo I took.
That's funny. The Sad Clown was one of my first minifigure purchases too, and I was the same way. I loved Lego as a kid. I had like half of my room was devoted to Lego, and then I got out of it for a long time because, you know, I thought I was too cool for toys and had other things to do, and same kind of thing. I found out like, wait, they've been making these minifigures all this time, and so yeah, it's funny that we kind of got back into it the same way through the minifigures.
Yeah, I mean they're excellent. I mean, it was a brilliant idea on Lego's part, and they're so well designed. So I mean, and everything interconnects, and they've got character to them. And I like that they're not totally branded as a character, you know.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of characters, I love that you've created recurring characters for your photographs, and you do stories with things like a raptor named Lenny, and he's on a red bike all the time, or you have a hiker with a long gray beard named Jim, or Ted the zombie, and Frank the stormtrooper. Can you talk about the inspiration for those characters and why you keep returning to them to photograph again and again?
Well, the Lenny raptor was kind of I just thought it looked funny, you know? So I'm like, that would be hilarious to have a raptor riding a bike. So I just took it out and tried it, and I got it to balance, and, you know, people liked it. So I kept taking pictures of that one and kind of developed a character of, you know, this totally out of character raptor, you know, and I chose the name Lenny for him because it's, I don't know, it just seems like the most un-raptor name I could think of.
Yeah, I could see that.
So, and I thought that would kind of play into the humor as well. And that one's kind of an interesting character because I've sold some of my prints, and that one is a very popular print that I sell. And it's interesting because the customers I get are not your typical toy lovers that would buy toy photography. Like I had this lady that bought it for her son who was racing in the Ironman. Hmm. So he was competing in an Ironman race, mountain bike race, and, you know, is part of that. And so it was like a, you know, for her, it was like, hey, this is a big, tough dinosaur riding a bike, and it represented her son.
That's really cool. And yeah, something you probably wouldn't have thought about when he originally started taking those pictures.
Yeah, exactly. Like I had no intention of even selling pictures of it, but hey, it works out.
Yeah. So were the other characters you've created kind of the same thing, just funny scenarios you thought of that then stuck around? Or
yeah, mostly. Like the Frank the stormtrooper, he's kind of evolved. Like at first he was never unmasked, and then I wanted to take off the helmet and, you know, the face from the Marceline, what is it, Adventure Time?
Mm-hmm.
The dimensions head or whatever. It's just a hilarious face. So I thought it would look great on a stormtrooper since they're black and white and it's black and white. So I you know, replaced the head, and that got lots of kicks. So I just keep going with it, rolling with it. But it's interesting how the characters develop over time. You know, like I kind of start out in one way and then they just gradually change. And I don't know how or why they change. It's just happens.
Yeah, I've noticed that through the hiker minifig you have, Jim, how I think it used to just be like a normal hiker, and now all of a sudden he's got this big long gray beard and bushy gray hair.
Yeah, and that one actually was, that's one that has a little bit more meaning behind it. I use him as kind of a more serious toned image. Because when I go out in nature, you know, I like to do it for entertainment and all that, but it's really to get out of all the busyness. You know, it's to get out of all the day-to-day work, all the, you know, everything that you have to deal with, all the electronics, everything, even though I have my camera with me when I'm taking pictures of that. But, you know, just getting out in the hills, and especially, you know, I live 5 minutes from some red cliffs, and lots of great hiking areas are like a 5 minute drive. So, you know, I'll quickly go out there and I'll go hike up and, you know, get a nice view of the town and the valley, and you know, look for some geocaches or something, and I bring my kids along. So it's just fun to get away from it all. And the Jim character is kind of a loner hermit type.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I need that. I need to get out of the desert just by myself and just enjoy nature.
Let's talk about your location for a bit, because you live out in Utah, and I feel like it really makes your photos stand out. They look really unique. just because of that desert landscape, and you have a lot of warm tones, and, you know, obviously you do different things too, but you definitely utilize that desert landscape to its fullest. Can you talk about that, what it's like living out there and photographing out there, and how you use that location to your advantage?
Yeah, I mean, I just keep coming back. You know, we've moved away several times, and we just always end up back here in Cedar City. It's just a great town. It's really close to a lot of national parks. We got Zions National Park. It's about 45 minutes to the south of us. We've got lots of state parks as well. We got Bryce Canyon National Park, about 2 hours, an hour and a half to the northeast. I've got Arches nearby. But even just here in town, we got the Red Rocks, and I can go one direction and be in the Red Rock Cliffs. I can go another direction and be up in Aspen in the mountains. I can go, you know, out west, and I can be into mossy granite type stone that's all broken apart in a place called Three Peaks. And then I can go out a little further west, and I've got the endless valleys of the desert basins, because that's where the Great Basin kind of starts. Mm-hmm. It's here in Utah, and then you have the long stretches of valleys with the dirt roads that go on forever.
Yeah.
And then the mountains and another valley. So it's got a nice mix of everything. And, you know, we get snow too. We get all four seasons here. So, you know, I get a dabble in the snow, and I get to get out in the summer heat. So, and we actually had a blizzard today. Power went out at work, and I ended up coming home early, so worked out. But I just love getting out in the Red Rock. I mean, there's just something about it, and it really shows in my pictures. Like a lot of my pictures that I've taken with, you know, the nice bokeh and stuff is down at the Tuacon. So the Tuacon is known as Broadway in the desert. So it's basically they do a lot of Broadway shows and Disney shows and stuff, and it's in this natural amphitheater of Red Rock cliffs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful setting. You know, they have a lot of famous people that come there. They have Weird Al that's coming here in May, I believe.
Oh, nice. I'm a big Weird Al fan.
Yeah, same here. But, you know, they also have this, the Tuacon Saturday Market. And I've been going out there for a good...
Just like dead landscape, you know, but then moving away and going back and looking at it, it's like, oh, this is actually really beautiful in its own way, you know? And I think you capture that wonderfully in your photos.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I have fun with it. You know, I'm Mormon, so I went on an LDS mission or Mormon mission out in New York City. And, you know, coming from a little town in Utah with lots of open space to New York City, they dropped us in the Bronx.
Oh, wow.
So it's like I went from the airport straight to the Bronx, and it was just like, okay, we'll pick you up in a few hours. You know, it was kind of crazy, but I lived out there for 2 years. And when I got back here, it was like night and day. It was like, holy cow, what the, you know?
Yeah.
But it was a good experience, you know, and I met a lot of people and a lot of nice people, and realized that people are good everywhere, you know, and I got a lot of respect for, you know, people that have gone through some, and you know what, with all this beauty around me, all these different desert landscapes, a lot of my pictures are just in a bush in my front yard.
That's the benefit of shooting at such a small scale, you know, you can really zoom in and hide whatever the surroundings are and really focus on the small little details. So you can't tell at all that you're just 5 feet from your front door.
Yeah, especially with like a, you know, when you have a shallow depth of field, I love super fast lenses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they give that really nice bokeh, creamy, smooth look to them. Like a recent shot I took was the Knight Rider.
Yeah, I saw that one. That's a really good one.
Yeah, well, I went out. It was raining last night. We have crazy weather here in Cedar City. So it was raining like all day yesterday, raining last night, and then it snows today. So, but anyways, I was out in the rain yesterday, and you know, that's just that all the color in that image was from a TJ Maxx sign.
Oh, wow.
So I was just in the parking lot, so I get the nice reflections of the light in the parking lot, and it looked awesome. I was really pleasantly surprised with that. And I have this new Camlin 50 millimeter 1.1 lens, f1.1, and it's the fastest lens I have, and you know, I'm trying to figure out how to use it, because I'm not used to such a fast lens, because during the day it looks it doesn't look that great because it's really soft, wide open.
Mm-hmm.
But at night, it was excellent.
Yeah, I'm looking at the photo right now, and it looks amazing. It's a really good shot. I would have never guessed, too, that you took it at night.
And that's in a parking lot, so you really don't need the beautiful landscapes around you. You can do toy photography even if you live in a city somewhere and you never see desert landscapes or nice greenery. There's ways to, I don't know, like the studio shots I found work the best if I'm in the dark and then add light.
Mm-hmm.
So I just try to get rid of every other light source and then works well. But I like shooting outdoors because I just get more colorful stuff and more natural tones.
You mentioned your children earlier. You have 5 children. You said that you take them with you on some of your photo taking sessions. How do they feel about your toy photography? Are they excited about it?
Yeah, they love the photos. They like to look at my phone, and I'll find them looking through all my images on my phone. And most of the time, it's not serious. You know, it's meant to get people to laugh. I take my older boys out hiking quite a bit, and then my oldest daughter, she's 5, so she's starting to go hiking with us, and she's actually done pretty well. I haven't had to help her too much, but you know, my oldest boy is only 9.
Hmm.
So I've got 5, 9 and under. So it's a handful. My oldest boy, Craig, I gave him one of my old cameras, and he's been trying to figure out how to use it. And it's a super zoom. So it's got a little bit more kid friendly. It doesn't have all the features of, you know, like a SLR or a Micro Four Thirds, but you know, and then they have their own little devices that have cameras on them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fun to find my other boy, Tyler. He was showing me, he had set up this scene, and he was taking pictures of it with Lego. And I was like, yes.
Yeah, I was going to ask if they are interested in doing it themselves at all. So that's really cool.
Yeah. And they're showing me some pictures that they took. And I'm like, yeah, that looks great. They have some good storytelling behind it, you know?
You've developed some pretty large followings on Instagram and Google+. Can you talk about your thoughts on those two platforms and how you approach using them? You said you started with Instagram, right?
Yeah, I started on Instagram, and I'm all about joining pretty much any social media platform that comes up just to test it out. But I started an Instagram back in 2012, and it's been a really good platform for me. I enjoy it. I like the functionality of it, but it's more geared towards self.
Mm-hmm.
If that, I mean, there's a good toy community on Instagram, like a really good one, and that's really what introduced me to the toy photography in general. But at the same time, I feel like it's, you know, with the algorithm changes and things, and they're owned by Facebook. You know, that was kind of a downer for me when Facebook bought Instagram, because it's like now it's just turning into this whole chat thing. I like the platform, and I'm still using it a lot, and I get a lot of activity on there, which I like. But I tried out Google+. Actually, Shelly, you know, says, hey, you should try out Google+. So I came over to Google+ and got the feel of it and set up all my different categories or whatever, collections.
Mm-hmm.
And overnight, I just started getting tons of followers on the Lego photography. And I was like, what is going on here? So I don't know. I didn't do anything for Google+. I don't know how I ended up with that many people following my toy photography on there. But the interaction on Google+, I think the best part of that is the interaction on the toy photographers community. It's been a really good, you know, good source for feedback and to share tips and tricks and all that kind of stuff. And I feel there's a lot of users on there that, you know, are interested in learning from others and sharing their secrets.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I haven't found that in very many groups on Google+. So I don't know if it's just toy photography or what, but I've joined quite a few groups on there, and there's like hardly any interaction on a lot of the groups. So I think it's a lot to do with, you know, the people that are in charge of the group as well.
Yeah, I think so. And you're now one of those people too. You've recently become a moderator on the Google+ community. Congratulations. Can you talk about what that experience has been like so far and how that's going?
Yeah, so far I think they've been pretty easy on me. You know, it's been a good experience so far. You know, I've been able to allow people into the group because it's, you know, you have to get permission to join the toy photographers. And that could be a huge job if it was just one person to help find out who is actually into it or if it's just a spammy account. Yeah, and I've been able to find a lot of new people that I didn't know about. You know, when they join the community and ask to join or whatever, I can go check out their accounts and then, follow some links and see what they're doing. And if they've got some good photography and stuff, and even if they don't, if they're just interested in toys, it's like, yeah, you know, we bring everybody into the fold. I'm all for like WordPress and blogging. I was really happy with the photo blogs back in the day, like, you know, the early 2000s. There was a big photo blogging community, and I was a part of that. You know, I like to do my photography and write about it. And then you had the third parties that came in and kind of took all that engagement and tied it up into a package that was easy to use. And that's, you know, where we had Instagram and Facebook and then all these other social media sites. But I feel like we've lost a little bit of that community that we had with the photo blogging. And I think that's what we're getting back with toy photographers. Well, with the online community, with the website, the blog tied to the social platforms. You know, the social platforms are not the only tool that's being utilized. And I like that. There's tons of interesting content on there, too. I learned tons about photography just going through the blog and reading it and, you know, going through comments and things. So I enjoy it.
Yeah. And you've written for the blog a few times.
Yeah. So Shelley approached me and, you know, asked me if I wanted to write something for the blog. And this was, I think, back in February of last year. And, you know, I'm all for it. You know, I like to write. I like to take photos. And I know WordPress because I actually have built several websites with WordPress. I understand the platform. And so I said, sure, count me in. I like the six image narratives that Toy Photographers does because it really kind of pushes me because usually I'm just going for one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And to take that further than one shot is sometimes a stretch for me. So,
and speaking of blog posts, when I originally told Shelley and the rest of the group that I wanted to get you on the podcast, Shelley made it a point to tell me to ask you about vintage lenses and cameras, and you mentioned those earlier. And you just wrote a blog post about vintage lenses. Can you talk about the vintage lenses you use and why you like them and what you think that adds to your photography?
Yeah, so I've got a lot of vintage lenses, and then I've also got some, you know, autofocus new lenses. And I don't use my autofocus lenses very much unless I'm taking pictures of my kids because they move around so much. I got to have an autofocus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless I'm outdoors and you get a gust of wind, then that can get frustrating when you set it up like six or seven times.
Oh,
and it just
yeah.
keeps getting knocked over and you forgot your blue tack or whatever.
Too many times that's happened to me. Too many times.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but yeah, I love the look of vintage glass and not to mention they're cheap. Yeah, and I can get a... Like, one of my favorite lenses is a Minolta Roker, the 58mm f1.4. So my brother actually gave me that lens, too, and he bought it at a thrift store for $10.
Oh, wow.
And it was all caked in dust, and it was in pretty bad shape, but he took it all apart, and he just likes to do that for a hobby. But he took it all apart and cleaned it up and everything, and he gave it to me for a Christmas present. And it's a fantastic lens. And it's got it just got a nice, solid feel to it. You know, the old lenses are all metal and glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that heaviness. You know, when I get I got a newer lens. It's the Sigma 60mm. Excellent lens. But it's so lightweight. It feels like I'm going to break it, you know? You know, where it wasn't just... made to get a buck, you know. I'm not saying new lenses are bad or anything. I like new lenses too, but there's just character in old glass that you can't really get in the newer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I kind of brought that up in the blog post. You know, it's like, why does Instagram have filters? You know, a lot of those filters that they have on there are to emulate old vintage lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Textured filter over the top of it from Instagram. You know, I was thinking, why is that a thing?
I'd never really thought of it that way.
Yeah, like, why do we want to add scratches? There's so many, you know, like Google has Snapseed, and then there's other apps that I use quite often, actually, Mextures and a few other apps that are awesome. I use Nlight all the time. But a lot of those add all sorts of filters and lens flares and scratches and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, it's kind of cool to get that stuff without adding a filter.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a lot of that with old glass, especially if you're using like some junker lens from, you know, a thrift shop. Not that that lens that I got is a junker. It's a fantastic lens, and it takes really nice, clear shots with excellent bokeh. And there's character in the bokeh. Like that, I've got this Jupiter 37A lens. It's a Russian lens. And I ordered that one from Russia as well. I'm a fan of Russian glass. But this Jupiter lens, it's got, if you look really closely, like you almost have to use another magnifying glass to look at it. But there's all sorts of bubbles in the lens. So during the manufacturing process, you know, they didn't have it necessarily down all the way. You know, like nowadays they have aspherical elements, and so they can get this clarity in the glass that wasn't possible in the 80s. And that's when this Jupiter lens was made. And so you have all these air bubbles and stuff, but it really adds kind of a swirly texture to the image that's really hard to define, but it just looks totally different, and it's awesome. I love it. I'm always using that lens, even though it's like 135 millimeters, so I gotta be like 3 feet away from my toy. But
like you said, it adds character to your shots, and it adds a different element that really makes your photo stand out.
Yeah, well, and I don't have to add very much detail. So what really started pushing me in that direction, there was a tag on Instagram, No Filter Lego No Filter Friday. So I was using a lot of the Instagram filters. Like my newest or my oldest shots, you know, were all on the iPhone, and I was testing out all these different filters and effects and stuff. And then I found that tag or whatever, the Lego No Filter Friday. And I was like, well, that'd be interesting. So it started making me focus more on my composition, more on the colors, more on the lighting, and more on the story of each image, rather than just hurrying and taking a shot and then editing it later,
mm-hmm.
you know, to add that kind of content into it. I like to go as real as possible in my images. So even though it's, you know, a toy that I'm making come to life, which is not real at all, it's kind of a catch-22 there. But
the last thing I wanted to ask you about was, in addition to being a toy photographer, you also make wow flutes, and you've, according to your website, you sold over 50,000 of them, which is amazing. So let's talk about those. Why did you start making those, and how do you make them, and what are they?
Well, so the wow flute, wow and wow flute actually stands for Wasawak Ocarina Whistle, but that's a mouthful.
Yeah, wow is much easier to say.
Yeah, and the Wasawak is just my last name backwards, and it kind of worked because it was like it ends with the ock and it starts with the wah, you know, like a whistle and an ocarina. But I changed it to the wow flute a couple years ago and haven't looked back. But yeah, the wow flute, I learned how to play the Native American style flute when I was in high school, just kind of a hobby. I played the clarinet in high school,
mm-hmm.
but then I did the Native American flute. And I also did ceramics and pottery in high school. I had a ceramics teacher that showed me how to make whistles out of clay. Like he gave us all a paper and says, you can make music out of clay. And I was just fascinated with that because I'm really into dual functionality. Like that's a really, I love anything that's dual functional. And with toy, you know, toy photography, I kind of look at that as a dual functional thing. You know, you have a toy that you can play with, and then you have something you can create art with as well.
Yeah.
So, and with dual functionality, I just like excellent designed products, and Lego is one of those. And that's why I take a lot of pictures of Lego, because it's hard to go to other toys when I'm so used to the quality there. But you know, this little wow flute, I started out making whistles, and when I found out you could make mud into music, that was so cool. So I started making you know, cups and bowls and plates all whistle.
Huh.
You know, all my assignments in my classes had some kind of whistle tied to it, and that was kind of turned into my signature thing in high school. I competed for the Sterling Scholar, actually against my cousin, and in high school, and I lost, but it was great because she won. But
yeah,
but it was a win-win either way. But I started making these little flutes where I wanted to. I found out if you add more holes to the clay, you know, you can change the tone, all of that kind of stuff, and just through trial and error, I developed my own fingering system based on the Native American style of flute. So it's a six-hole ocarina. And most people know about ocarinas from Zelda, Legend of Time.
Yeah, it's the first thing I think of.
yeah. So, and that's the first thing that most people think of is Zelda. Well, I had never played Zelda Ocarina of Time. Like, I didn't own it. The only Zelda I played was the Game Boy version, the Link's Awakening, which is great, by the way.
Yeah, I love that game. That's one of my favorite Zelda games.
Oh, yeah. It's great. So I did kind of get the idea from that because I... like, well, I want to make something that's portable like that, too. But I decided to try it out, and it worked, you know, and I've just been making them ever since, going on 15, almost 20 years now.
That's awesome. And they look amazing, too. You've got these really cool swirling designs, and they're really colorful, and that is... so that's all clay?
Yeah, the swirl flutes are made out of a polymer clay.
Oh, okay.
So I'll take three or four colors of clay, and then I mix them to get the swirl patterns. And then I shape them all by hand and tune them all by hand. So I don't have a mold or anything, which is frustrating at times because it kind of makes me the bottleneck.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I haven't really been able to grow it beyond a side business hobby because of that. I did do several different Kickstarter projects. I did a Kickstarter project for a Triton wow flute, which is a manufactured version of it. It doesn't sound as good because my other ones are handmade and hand-tuned. So each one is exact, where, you know, the Triton one, it's supposed to all be the same. You know, that's why I got the injection mold in the first place.
Yeah.
But I found that it's quite a bit different from whistle to whistle there. And that's been kind of, that was a learning curve for sure. Then I also did a Kickstarter project to produce what I call the Relic Wow Flute, which is a version of it made out of metal. And, you know, they're relatively cheap. So I've moved a lot of them. You know, they've been popular at the Tuacon Saturday market. So I'm out there selling my flutes, and now I've added toy photography to the mix, and it's just a really random set of stuff on my table. You know, it looks nice, but you know, it goes from music to like metal work to toy photography. It's like, how are those related at all?
It's like, you they're know, fun, they're, that's how.
Yeah, exactly, they're fun, and it has me, that I'm the common denominator between those.
That's awesome. Yeah, my mother-in-law is she makes jewelry and stuff out of polymer clay. She does some really cool polymer clay art, and I never thought of it as something you could make like a musical instrument out of. So it's really cool that you thought of that and came up with it. It's amazing.
Well, and it's been a big learning curve too. It took me a long time to get to where, you know, I can make them as quickly as I can now. But I actually developed that when I was out on my mission out in New York. In the LDS Church, you have a mission president that's kind of over all the missionaries in a specific area, a geographic area. He had seen that I made these little flutes, and so he bought me some clay, and he says, you know what, can you make my wife one of these flutes? Make her a pig whistle. So I started sculpting all sorts of stuff and making them into flutes. And I've done a lot of that. I did a sculpting class and a lot of other things that I found out that when you're sculpting, you need a hollow chamber. Otherwise, it'll explode in the kiln, at least with clay. And so that's what you need for an ocarina as well, is you need a hollow chamber. So I was like, oh, perfect. You know, two and two together, do the dual functionality thing, art and music. And that's kind of what I've done with the little wow flutes is, you know, art and music. If you can't play it, you can at least play a sound on it and you can wear it.
Yeah, it'll just look good sitting there, you know?
Yeah, and each one comes with the music to the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I figure that's like the epitome of the Southwest. So, you know, that's the one I included. But I can play like 90 songs on these little flutes, and they're actually kind of... they're kind of fun, and I always have one on me.
Do you have any like recorded music I could add to the podcast?
You know what? I could play one. I've got it on me.
Okay,
I don't know how
awesome.
Well it would sound.
Let's try it.
I do have some recorded music as well, but It's on SoundCloud.
Yeah, I'll pull some of the recorded stuff to use in the episode. I think that'd be cool. But yeah, if you want to play your wow flute right now, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I've got this little one. It's called the Relic wow flute. This one I'm going to play is a sterling silver flute. So I made it out of sterling silver. It's quite a bit smaller than my swirl one, so it's a little bit higher pitched. I don't know. I'm on my iPhone headphones. I don't know if it'll like blow your ears out or something.
We'll see.
So we can test it.
All right.
So good, the bad, and the ugly.
That was awesome. It sounded great.
All right. And I'll play you one more. This is the Cantina Band.
Oh, awesome.
So that's my own rendition of it.
That was great. Thank you for doing that.
So and this particular one is so small that I have to hold my breath to play it.
Oh, wow.
So that's why it's like...
Well, that was great. Thank you for doing that. I didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
Hey, it's all good. I always have one on me, so...
Cool. And if people want to check those out or buy one for themselves, where can they find them?
You can find them at wowflute.com. Or if you're in Utah and you happen to go to the TuaCon on a Saturday, I just might be there.
Selling toys and musical instruments.
Yep.
Cool. And then where can people find your stuff online? Instagram, Google+, what are your handles?
It's mostly JoeCow. So Instagram is JoeCow, JoeCow. Google+ is Joseph Kalishaw. The Lego photography is JoeCow Lego.
Well, thank you again for coming onto the podcast. I had a really good time talking to you. And learning more about your story and the wow flute story and all that. That was and hearing the wow flute was really cool. So thank you. This was a really fun episode to do.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, thanks for offering the opportunity. I enjoy it and it's been fun.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find new episodes of this podcast and daily articles on creativity and toy photography on our website, toyphotographers.com. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. We also ask that you please leave us a 5-star review. That'll help spread the word about the show and help us get noticed. You can find us on Facebook at Toy Photographers and on Instagram at @toyphotographers_. Music for this week's episode is courtesy of freemusicarchive.org. And finally, you can reach out to us with comments, concerns, recommendations, etc. at toyphotographypod@gmail.com. I'm James Garcia. You can find my work every single week at toyphotographers.com, as well as on Twitter at TheRealJames, real spelled R-E-E-L, on Instagram at TheRealJames23, and on my website, TheRealJames.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you guys next week.